Good evening and welcome everyone to the Truth Traveler Radio Show. I'm Erin Dakins. Thank you for being here. Thank you for joining us. I hope everyone had a wonderful weekend. We had awesome weather Saturday. Now I really have spring fever, but now we have a snowstorm moving in. So I guess it's all good in Indiana. I guess the good news is we all got out of bed this morning. Tonight's going to be an interesting show as far as I'm going to try not to lose my cool, and I will try to maybe mute my microphone if I go on a tear, because I'm really upset. I've got two guests. The first guest is going to be on with us for about a half an hour with some updates. That's Phil Hudock, and you go to hudock.info and find out more information. We're going to get updates on Thomas Deegan's case, and that's what has me upset. My guest that'll be on the whole time tonight is Al Whitney. Now, Al Whitney is also a radio host over at RBN. Her website is anticorruptionsociety.com. She's also the author of a book called Lawfully Yours that you can locate on that site as well. And listeners, this is a fantastic book to have, I promise you. It's spiral-bound, easy to go through it. I've already underlined, asterisked. I've already monkey-eared some of the pages, or dog-eared, whatever you want to call it. It's a fantastic book. It's got great information in it. It's got samples of letters in case you need them. She did a fantastic job on that. We're going to talk about the government. Well, the corporate government, I guess you want to say it. The corporate government that's totally out of control now. The gloves are off. There are no rules. Thomas Deegan's case is case in point. So we have with us Al Whitney, and we have Phil Hudock. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Good evening.
Hi, Al. Hi, Phil. How are you guys doing?
I've had better days.
Me too.
Yeah, I'm fine. I'm eager to hear what Phil has to say.
Well, Phil, you just sent me this email that just about sent me probably through the second story of my house. So, why don't you share, because when did I talk to you? Friday night? I talked to you Friday night.
I think that was after the hearing.
And basically you told me from that, I've thought about a lot about what you said, and you were exhausted, and I was kind of flustered myself. So anyway, you said that basically the prosecutor said nothing, that basically the whole hearing was between the judge, Judge Reed, and Thomas himself. And basically
correct,
that nothing was really determined, that it was going to kind of be continued until March 15th. But now, well, we did have, what, 20 plus people show up for Thomas this time?
Correct. On Friday, we were to have a revocation of home confinement hearing. And also the prosecutor, assistant prosecutor, had filed a motion for continuance on that hearing. The judge granted the continuance, and then he went into a hearing on evidence and motions, which neither the prosecutor nor the nor Thomas, you know, the defendant, was prepared. This just came out of the blue. And the judge said that, the prosecutor did not object to any of Thomas's motions. Like you say, he didn't say anything. And the judge ruled against Thomas on every motion. He did allow a few things, a couple things, into evidence. And when Thomas questioned the judge about, well, you know, in the past, none of my filings have been in the court record. And at one point, the judge said, you know, I can do whatever I want. And that's exactly what the judge did. He did set the hearing. Actually, he set the hearing for revocation of home confinement to March 15th. Mm-hmm. Which was also the day for the threats of terrorism charge. So Thomas said, well, I'm going to have two things to prepare for on the same day. Plus, there was supposed to be jury selection. It was going to be a monster day, but it turns out that day is probably not going to happen because this morning the sheriff woke Thomas up and told him, you are going to a hearing on March 1st,
mm-hmm.
handed him a letter from the judge in which the judge declared that Thomas is guilty of violation of home confinement.
Okay. Okay, look. I am stupid when it comes to this stuff. Al, what is your... Phil, can he just... Obviously, all the gloves are off. Can he just do that?
He said, I can do whatever I want. It's Judge Reed's courtroom. It's not the people's courtroom.
No, it's not. You're right about that.
Have you heard of anything like this before, Al, in all of your experience?
Oh yeah. Oh, absolutely. It is the judge's courtroom. It's an administrative court. And Thomas is not a flesh and blood living being in that court. What he is he's his straw man. They are ruling on his straw man. They don't have any obligation to hear the straw man. In fact, they can't even see the straw man. Thomas is running into this whole nightmare that this commercial system has created of our courts.
One of our researchers has dug up a lot of information about that jail plus other jails. See, they built these regional jails in West Virginia. You used to have just county jails, and then you had penitentiaries. Well, now they have regional jails, and it turns out all these regional jails are leased to own by the state. They're actually privately run, and the state is leasing them, and they have to keep a certain occupancy. That's in the contract. We found several hundred pages which were going to be presented to the judge and the prosecutor today, and I wouldn't be surprised if they knew this kind of information was coming. And so they're doing damage control. It could be. At this point, those documents will not be entered into the record. However, as soon as I can, I will post these on the website. As Thomas has said, he does. The only thing he can see that can come out of this ordeal is for people to see what's really happening. In other words, he's sacrificed his freedom to be a whistleblower. And it's sad because most people, they come out for a free hot dog, but to actually stand up for someone who's fighting for their freedom, nah. You know, we had 20 people show up, and I think, Carl came from Atlanta, and Leonard came from California, and some people came from northern Ohio and other places. But, you know, people, there are probably dozens or hundreds of people in the Parkersburg area that knew about it, but, you know.
Didn't come. Now, is Leonard going to stay?
Yeah.
Or did Leonard already go back to California?
What's that?
Is Leonard still here?
Leonard just got back to California. He drove. He came to Washington, D.C., the Washington, D.C., Baltimore area, and picked up a car. He is a dealer. So since he was going to come this way, he, you know, worked it out to do that and then drive all the way back to California. And he just got back and learned what had happened this morning.
Okay, guys, is there any recourse? Is there anything that can be done?
He can always challenge jurisdiction at any time if he finds the venue to do that. In this system, jurisdiction is the issue. That is the issue. And if he raises a significant challenge of jurisdiction, in theory, they can't proceed without resolving it.
Yes, you're talking theory, Al, and he has brought it up, and it doesn't matter what he does. The judge just continues. You know, the judge entered a plea for him. When he's brought those things up, it's as if he wasn't there. So I don't know of any laws or any obstruction of justice that hasn't been committed. You know, the arrest papers are what's the wrong person, the wrong place, and the wrong charge. That's just on his arrest warrant. You know, there is nothing. They totally ignored the writ for habeas corpus and broke the law by not bringing him to the county, to Doddridge County, where the jail is located, where the writ was, you know, where the hearing was scheduled for the writ of habeas corpus. And then the judge wouldn't let me speak, and I filed on his behalf, and the warden didn't bring him. And when we scheduled a second hearing, the judge transferred the writ of habeas corpus back to Wood County, and I'm sure that was because they were all in cahoots, and so they've ignored that. There is
but they threatened you too.
Right, I was threatened that if I spoke, I would be charged with a misdemeanor for practicing law without a license.
Okay. Let's go back to something Judge Dale wrote.
Yes.
There's two different things that I want to say. And I don't, I just remember when I read this in your book, and I'd read it before because I've read Judge Dale's work, but I did asterisk this and I dog-eared this page. The pseudo-judges of these pseudo-courts have no powers without the consent of both the plaintiff and the defendant, and in every case the judge must determine that he has consent, or personam and subject matter jurisdiction, before he can act or access the SESTA-Q account. Absent these aforementioned contracts, the court cannot proceed against you. We'll hold it right there. We'll be right back with Phil Hudock and Al Whitney. Check out anticorruptionsociety.com. Welcome back. We have with us tonight Al Whitney, anticorruptionsociety.com, and host at RBN. We have Phil Hudock. We just got Phil for this last segment here. Just updates on Thomas. Does that make any sense that, I mean, it used to be, I think maybe when Judge Dale was a judge, I know Thomas hasn't contracted with him. I don't think he signed anything, has he, Phil?
No, he's done everything right. But when you put the executive, legislative, and judicial branches of all levels of county and state government in default and dishonor, that makes you a dangerous man. He's the most dangerous person in the country right now, according to the establishment, I'm sure. And so they have to make an example out of him, because you don't dare disgrace the powers, you know. He was even told today, he was put on notice, that they are subjecting his mail to a higher level of scrutiny now. They basically told him, we will decide what you can receive and what you can send out.
Do they let him take calls?
Phone calls?
Mm-hmm.
No one can call in, and I would say probably 20% of his calls ever connect when he tries to call out.
Wow.
So there have been two or three days at a time when he can't call anyone. He's supposed to be able to. People put money on their phones so that he can call them. And he'll call here, and the phone will ring, and it'll start through the, you know, this is such and such, you know, service. You pay a lot for this service. See, they make money off the commissary, they make money off the phone system, and they have total control. So if you do get him, and I think Aaron's probably heard some of his calls, it's very hard to understand him. It sounds like he's talking on a Mickey Mouse phone.
And it's so low, you can hardly hear him.
Right, right. So I have to tape it. I have to record it and then play it back with headphones on and play it over and over to get what he said. So, you know, I when he's talking to me, I agree with him, but I usually don't understand what he's saying until I replay it several times.
It makes it really hard to come up with a good game plan if you can't hear the other party. I'm just saying.
Right, and it's just like when he's in court, he's got, you know, his hands are handcuffed and he's got a chain around his back, and you know he's trying to manipulate papers. When I go through the paperwork here, I have a hard time with two free hands, and yet there he is in court. Basically hindered and hampered. It's disgusting. This is demeaning.
You're about out of time, Phil, but this is Judge Jeffrey B. Reed, correct?
Hair, you know, H-E-I-R.
Well,
Jeffrey B.
I think
Reed,
is
right,
there's... I think we need to get up some way. Mick from New Mexico called, said we should be boycotting this judge. We should be spewing his name and his phone numbers out all over this, the airwaves, the internet, Facebook. We should be bombarding that courthouse with calls is what should be happening.
Absolutely. He was extremely upset twice during the hearing, once when my wife was praying, whispering, and the other time, someone's phone went off, and both times he looked at me and stared at me for a minute and yelled at me, and, you know, you better not be recording this. And guess what? WTAP, the only folks allowed to videotape, have not posted anything of this hearing. Nothing. There's not 1 minute. And everything else has been posted, so there's a total blackout now where people can't even see what went on in the courtroom.
Okay. See if we can get the numbers for that courthouse, anything we can get on this Judge Reed. You post it, I'll post it, we'll put it on Facebook, we'll blast it on the airwaves. Let's bring a little heat down on this courthouse in the next week. Listeners, can we all do that? Can we all make a few phone calls? If you can get that to me, Phil, that would be fantastic. And we'll
I'll get it to you, and I'll have it on the website in 20 minutes.
Let's do it. Let's hammer it out there, and I will give it out before the end of the show tonight.
Okay.
Let's diss this Reed, like Don says. Let's diss him. Let's go after him. Guys, we got enough people. Come on. Thomas is standing for us. He stood in the gap. We can at least fight back a little bit. Phil Hudock, thanks for coming on tonight. I'm sure I'll talk to you this week.
Thank you, Aaron. God bless.
God bless you, too. We'll be right back with Al Whitney, anticorruptionsociety.com, after these messages. Welcome back. We have with us tonight Al Whitney. Her website is anticorruptionsociety.com. This, if you want to know anything about the court system or anything like that, this is a good place to go. Now, Al was a registered respiratory therapist. She's been an instructor in cardiac life support. She's been a realtor, court-appointed special advocate for abused and neglected children, environmentalist, data entry, researcher. She's married to a retired physician. She's a mom. She's a grandma. She's a techie, too. I need techies in my life. Anyway, she's done it all. She's done the research. Listeners, check out her website. Check out the book, Lawfully Yours. It's fantastic. Now, Al, I have a question for you, and I'm not trying to put you on the spot, but you're smarter in this stuff than I am, a ton. If we can all start calling the Wood County Judicial Building in West Virginia, and I've got the phone number, I can give it out. If you were going to make that phone call, what would you say to whoever answered the phone?
Well, let's kind of put together, before we go there, one of the things that caught my attention, of the many things about Tom Deegan, was his exposing that it's all a corporation.
Mm-hmm.
That was so important, and he did it brilliantly, I might add. I have two things about Tom Deegan on the anticorruptionsociety.com because I was so impressed with what he was exposing in his claim. So if I am going to say something about how he has handled his case, it is not out of criticism for his brilliance. I am a major, major, major fan. However, I listen to all these encounters that people have with their courtrooms with the courts, with the legal system, and people tell me their whole stories, and I ask questions, and I ask questions, because what I'm finding is that if you dig into it deep enough, if you read the information in Lawfully Yours and read it again and read it again, you start to get the picture. And then when you hear the stories like Tom Deegan, you can more clearly see what the system has done. And Phil was so right about so many things. On our website, and I'm going to read you, if you don't mind, Aaron, that'll help kind of put this together. On our website, anticorruptionsociety.com, at the top, there is a link to Lawfully Yours. But if you put your cursor on the word Lawfully Yours, a drop-down menu appears, and it leads you to a piece that we put up there called Corporations Cannot Be Sovereign Governments. And what we did was put together some of Judge Dale's revelations and some revelations by Attorney Melvin Stamper. And you know both. In fact, you've read both.
Yes.
Fruit from a Poisonous Tree.
Fruit from a Poisonous Tree. I love it.
Love it. Okay. So going with this information, and then I was able, through another program, to locate an actual Chris account. Now, we all talk about this account, this Cestecute Trust, and some people say, well, we don't have any proof. Well, we do have proof. That's on our website, and you can look at how the courts are connected to the Treasury. Okay? You can see the report for yourself, and you'll see that what Judge Dale said is absolute, and Melvin Stamper, they're both right. Now, I want to read you just a little bit to support what Phil said. The courthouses are no longer public buildings, but are privately owned structures called judicial centers, mm-hmm. or a Department of Justice, and the prisons are privately owned facilities.
Correct.
The public defenders, prosecutors, and police are not there to protect and serve the public, but to the contrary, they are there to protect and serve the private corporations. The Vatican judges, prosecutor, and clerk make money off of your conviction. And the private owners of the prisons make money off your incarceration.
On top of charging the taxpayers.
Everything you sign with a wet ink signature becomes a negotiable instrument in their world and is converted into a guaranteed asset like a security or bond. Because you are a real flesh and blood living person. Many judges and law firms own the government buildings and the prisons. Your presence in a prison also fuels a mutual fund investment. In their world, everything is fictional, and therefore your living status creates substance for their world, both physically and in writing. Then he goes on to say, remember the land trusts. In the name of the Vatican, the Cestecuv, the prosecutor levels or files a charge against you and the trust with the clerk. The clerk documents the case and appoints a judge as the administrator for the trust. You are brought before them and asked if you are the named person on the indictment, and they then promptly advise you of your rights and the charge. It is really your birth certificate that is on trial and being prosecuted. But you don't know that, and your court-appointed lawyer will never tell you. Upon your conviction, and you will be convicted, the land trust pays damages to all individuals except you, because you are not real. The living you is the beneficiary of the trust, and the corporate you is on trial. They consider those trusts are for them, if they can access it. You never receive the benefit, and you are sentenced to prison, probation, or fined. Okay, that's what Thomas was subjected to. Now, here's, listening to Phil, I just want you to know, Aaron, that I think I've watched every YouTube that Phil has made regarding Thomas's case.
Mm-hmm.
It caught my attention, and I was such a fan, and so anytime I ran across a new one, I tried to watch it, and I watched some of them several times. Again, I was looking for the traps that the judge was trying to set.
Right.
And to get that jurisdiction. Now, Thomas kept denying them jurisdiction, right? Right.
Right.
However, guess when he gave them jurisdiction, and I think this is what they've done to him.
Okay.
When? According to Judge Dale, anytime you have a signature, if you hire a bar attorney, which he did not, but if you agree to a plea bargain, you're granting jurisdiction. A plea bargain is a confession, and it gives them jurisdiction. So that makes me very suspicious that the way they handled Thomas is they snagged him while he was still under confinement in their jurisdiction.
Right.
He was still in probation. He was still in contract on that case. So they used that case to establish what they then claim is their jurisdiction. That is why they snagged him at home, and that is why they ignore the fact that they were the reason he violated probation. That is the signature that they're connecting to. And if you want my opinion, I think that's why they're going to try to roll it all up in one day. They're using that first case to establish their jurisdiction so they can access the trust.
Now, is there any way, I don't remember which pages it was on, where you talked about where it spoke of if somebody had unwittingly signed something before they understood it, you can resend the signature?
Yes, yes.
Does he still have that? That is a viable option?
That's what I was, why I was listening so close to what Phil was saying about how they're communicating with him, you know? I think they understand how very smart he is, and I think they may also figure out that he is a part to a network that would be doing exactly what you and I are trying to do and what Phil is trying to do, seek a way to get him out of their jurisdiction. And that's why it's so hard to reach him. The UCC is in charge of these courts. You know that. And I think Thomas knows that, doesn't he?
Yes, he does. Mm-hmm. In fact, the night that he got arrested was the night we were going to do 2 hours on UCC.
Okay. Well, it's all UCC courts. It's all administration. It's in Lawfleyers. It's in Judge Dale. It's in Melvin Stamper. We've got a whole bunch of documents up the yin-yang to prove that's what these courts are, including that Chris account report that people can go look at. It's listed on the source document page as case monetization. And that is your verification of that trust that's been established. That's what they're accessing. So how can he do it? The UCC accepts a couple things. They actually accept mistakes. Only you have to use the word mistake.
Okay.
Now, I don't know if anyone can get to Thomas and ask him to start thinking about writing a statement, an affidavit statement, and Thomas knows what that is, of facts. And he could include in his statement that I made a mistake when I signed the parole papers, granted, you know?
Okay.
I'd like to rescind my signature. In other words, they actually do recognize a signature rescission if you made a mistake.
Okay.
But you got to use the word mistake.
Okay.
And people don't do that.
Okay.
Yeah, they use error, I did the wrong thing. I mean, it's real specific about mistakes. But I don't know if that will work. I mean, the other thing that we found, and I've listened to these stories, including the Dorch story. I was closely talking to them when out there in California when they were running into difficulty. A raid had been planned on their house, and it was one of these. They do these raids and they do these events to justify the grants that they get for these SWAT teams. So they broke into this guy's house as if it was a SWAT event. And they planted meth products in his house to make it justified so they could get their money from, you know, finding a drug offender. Okay, and now this guy out there, his name was Dorch. He went through all kinds of heck with them. And Again, he hired an attorney. The minute he hired an attorney, he granted them jurisdiction. Because remember, when you hire an attorney, and Thomas knows this, the attorney can sign all the paperwork for you.
That's right. That's right. They can, because they're acting in your on your behalf, right? You sign
right.
over power of attorney to an attorney, and then it's just like you. I mean, they're acting. I know it's ridiculous, and I certainly know he doesn't want a barred attorney. He wants legal counsel. He doesn't want a barred attorney. We'll be right back with Al Whitney, anticorruptionsociety.com, after this. Welcome back. Our guest tonight is Al Whitney, anticorruptionsociety.com. Guys, here, I just hit my lamp, sorry. Here is the number for the Wood County Judicial Building. It's in West Virginia. It's 304-424-1721. I will give it out again a couple times in the second hour. Okay. And when you call, don't curse at them. Let's be intelligent. Let's be, what's the word I want to use? Nice. You know, to yell and scream at these people, because inevitably that makes us all look like idiots. So,
you were saying, what should we say when we call them?
Yes.
I love the idea, Aaron, of saying, you're holding Thomas Deegan, who demonstrated that you're just a corporation and you don't have any authority to hold a flesh and blood living man in your custody.
Okay.
That would honor, in my opinion, honor the work that he has done by demonstrating to them that a lot of people know the gig is up. We know who the heck they are.
Yes, and we know that they don't have the authority they think they have over us.
That's right.
That's what, when I read Judge Dale and when I read Melvin Stamper, then Lawfully Yours from you, and all these conversations that I had with Thomas.
Yes.
Look, guys, we don't have to enter into contract with them. That's what it comes down to right there.
Right.
It's all contracts.
It's all contract. And what they did with Thomas, I saw them do that. They did this with Rod Class. I don't think Rod Class was going to sign their paperwork, which, again, they can't access the trust without a signature. However, what they did with Rod Class, he was not all that well physically, and they drove him around. I listened to his talk show program where he relayed what happened to him in Washington. They drove him around for, I guess, a couple days, and his health wasn't that good, so they wore him out. And then when they brought him, and then they threatened him. His wife is elderly, and
now, who is this, Al?
Pardon?
Who was this?
Rod Class, I think.
Rod Class. Okay. Yes, I know him. Okay, I had him on the show. Okay.
Okay. And he said that they threatened him. They said that if he went to jail, he would not have any income. They would discontinue his military retirement benefits or whatever, and that his wife would be destitute. So they put this psychological pressure on him to get him to sign a plea bargain. Once he signed the plea bargain, they had his signature, and they could proceed to access the trust.
Uh-huh.
So,
And I wonder how much his trust is worth.
Mm-hmm. I don't know, but I have a friend right here in Central Ohio. They wanted her friend, her boyfriend, so they were going to get evidence from her. So they picked her up, and it was a whole question when she told the story, the jurisdiction. What they did to trick her into their jurisdiction was somewhat amazing. But they did the same thing to her. They got her aside. She wasn't going to sign anything. She wasn't going to consent. She didn't consent to anything. But she was taking care of an elderly mother. So they threatened her. They said, if you don't sign this, we're going to put you in jail and nobody will be there to take care of her mother.
Mm-hmm.
So she signed a plea bargain, even though she was totally innocent.
Yep.
Ugh. So they got their signature.
And all they want is access to the account. That's all they want. It's all about money.
Exactly.
Well, Federal Reserve notes, some FRNs to decorate with, yes.
And I would think that it's costly. What they did with Thomas by going in there and extracting him from his house, while he was still in their jurisdiction, he was still on probation. So that wasn't cheap. So the more money they spend in these cases, it appears the more determined they get that they're going to get their money.
True. Oh, yes. And, I agree.
Yeah. And Thomas, if you look at, I looked at the video of what he was doing in court, and he was not consenting.
No. In fact, I love it because he just kept saying, I don't understand. I love it. Anyway, we're going to take this long break, then we'll be up for a long segment with Al Whitney. Check out anticorruptionsociety.com. Welcome back to The Truth Traveler. I'm Erin Dickens, and our guest is Al Whitney. You can find her website at anticorruptionsociety.com. There are links at The Truth Traveler as well for you to check it out. Now, I just hate this. I have a question, and it was brought up, Al, I'm kind of doing a 180 here, but I just want this answer, and I'm afraid I'll forget. You brought it up in Lawfully Yours, and then there's another comment on your website from somebody that, and I think people need to know this. Here's the question from your website, okay, but you do address this in the book. Does anybody know the real reason why they want you to register to vote?
Yes, of course.
I thought that was pretty interesting. Why don't you share that?
Yes. Well, there's three reasons they want you to register to vote. Because that gives them a tally on who still thinks the process works.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they monitor that. Mm-hmm. And if it turns out that we're all not voting, then they crank up the propaganda, you know? And then they figure out, well, how do we get the people back into believing in this system? That's number one. Number two, you're a U.S. citizen, and U.S. citizens are part of their corporation. If you notice, when you get a bank loan, they want to know that you're a U.S. citizen. When you get your driver's license, they want to know you're a U.S. citizen. That connects you to that corporate straw man. And number three, that's where they get their jury registration list, because you're all corporate citizens. You're all straw man corporate citizens. So if you're not a registered voter, they won't call upon you for jury duty. If you are...
I just got my first letter for jury duty last week.
You have to cancel the voter registration. Although
I'm going to have to, yes.
Judge Dale
does... I was going to ask you. Okay.
Yeah, Judge Dale has a method, and it works for jury duty when you get... Although if it was last week, you're supposed to respond within 3 days.
I already sent it back in, but I did say that they asked you if there was a reason why you didn't think that you would be good for jury duty. I said, yeah, because I don't believe in the Maritime Admiralty corporate system that you run. I believe in constitutional common law, so I don't think I'm going to be a real good fit for you.
Well, that's not exactly what Judge Dale recommends.
I know that's not what he recommended, but it came off the top of my head, and I wrote it down and sent it in.
Well, that's
because
okay.
Honestly, I don't know how long it was in my mailbox.
No, that's okay, because another way people get out of jury duty is if they miss that first stop, they go in there, and then they hand you that jury questionnaire, which is a contract.
Okay.
All you have to do is go in and say, well, I'm sorry, I'm not going to answer these questions. I'm not interested in this.
Okay, good. I'm going to contract with you on this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because there's your contract to serve on jury duty, and that's how they pay you some nominal fee. But the whole court thing is a scam. You know that. I know that. It's all administration. Uh-huh. The only reason they have you in there is to give it the appearance so the public doesn't realize that they don't have a functioning court anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so thinking back, I'm reading to Judge Dale, and I'm thinking what Phil Hudak said, and I just want to thank him for all the good information he provides. For those of us who are really watching this and trying to glean all the tips we can out of what's happening in that courtroom, his efforts have been wonderful. I hope he realizes that some of us are very appreciative of that. Okay, Today, each judge representing a court of record is a lawyer and a member of the American Bar Association Union. People have to understand that. It's a private club called the American Bar Association Union. And all these union judges have conspired to write a local rule of procedure prohibiting non-lawyers from the practice of law without a license. They have no lawful authority to do that, but that's what they've done. They now control the courts. They're their courts. Some people said, one of my consultants says, the Bar Association is the most apparent, most vicious, and least recognized secret society on the planet.
I think that's a very good point.
Yes. Yes.
But you know something else that I really, really like?
Yeah.
Is the judge wearing black robes.
Oh, yeah.
To me, now that I've grown up a little bit, to me, it just speaks evil. It's dark. They're trying to hide things while they're trying to hide the whole system.
Yes, exactly.
It's the total, you know, then you got the Pope that wears white, which, trust me, I don't like the Pope or the Catholic. It's not it. I'm saying you've got the Pope that wears white. All his little minions wear black. Look at the bishops, you know, those kind of things. The priests, they wear black.
Yes.
Then you get the judges that wear black. They're all part of the same family.
They are. And the other thing that happened to Tom Deegan, which happened to the Dorches, is when they make all of these, you call them errors, you know, when they behave in this outrageous fashion, both the Dorch gentleman and Tom Deegan are the kind of individual who would most likely get out and then file a claim of damages. So the more mistakes they make on you, the more determined they are that they get that signature and you cannot file damages against them for what they've done. And what they did, and you told me they did that, Phil Hudak said they did it, they claim that he broke probation.
Yes.
And when the story comes out, they are the reason he broke probation.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no one.
It's kind of hard to avoid that whole SWAT team taking you away physically and kidnapping you.
That's correct. So that gives you the clue that you need by the fact they're making a claim that he broke probation. That tells you that that is the contract that they're functioning under. And then when they try to move them all together in one day, what was interesting when I watched the one with the blonde judge, did you watch that one where Tom was
magistrate? She's a magistrate, Magistrate Waters. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I watched that one twice.
I watched it probably six times because it was
actually
kind of funny.
Did you get the trickery?
I got the trickery, how she was trying to trick him.
Yes.
Yes. And he wasn't falling for it, so.
But
yeah,
you could see that she was determined to trick him.
She was just ticked off by the whole thing.
Well, how about having an attorney just sit next to you in case you have any questions?
That's right.
But Tom knew that he had to say, I do not consent. See, any time they do that, if you don't object, then it is considered consent in their world. So he did tell her he did not consent. So she's stuck now with a problem, isn't she? Because he's not giving her that authority that she needs. Now,
backing down. He said, I want legal counsel.
Now,
but I will not accept a barred attorney. And then she would come back and say, the only attorneys that can operate in my court are barred attorneys.
Right. Now you've got the local rules.
But what happened to pro se? What happened to that? When did that disappear?
Once you're under their jurisdiction, the presumptions of the court kick in. And that's why there's another, you can do a YouTube search on it and watch these two black men, I believe they're in New Jersey, struggle against the issue of jurisdiction. And they put up a heck of a good fight. I don't know how it finally ended, but when you watch them saying, no, I object, I don't grant jurisdiction, you can't proceed, you can't give me an attorney, they were absolutely determined not to consent to this judge or this magistrate. And when you listen to that one, even my husband picked up on that. In fact, he showed it to me. He said, you got to watch this. I think the name is Moores. Maybe I can locate it on my computer and send it to you. Moores in court or something, M-O-O-R-S. They fought her, and she was tricking them. It was amazing. First, she tried to get them to take an attorney. They would not do that. Then she said, well, we'll bring you back for another hearing. And she was trying to get them to consent. To consent, I will come back. Well, that would be consenting. So they said, no, we want the charges dismissed. We don't consent to your jurisdiction.
Okay.
So then she went on to the next trick, Aaron. It was just, people need to watch this, and you see how these judges trick people. And then you realize it's important that they get this consent. So she said, well, why don't we have the next hearing just to decide whether or not you're going to have an attorney?
When you're going to have an attorney?
Yeah, we're going to have an attorney to talk. We're going to have a hearing, and I'm going to tell you today about the hearing, and I'm going to schedule the hearing, and you're going to come back for the hearing so we can discuss whether or not you're going to have an attorney. Now, can you figure out the trick in that?
Yeah, because then that's consenting. If they say okay, they just consented.
That's correct. They consented, and so they said no. We do not want a hearing. We don't need a hearing. We're not consenting to your jurisdiction. So you watched all these games that she played. It is amazing, and the more you watch, the more you start to see how the game is played.
Oh yes. And you could see toward the end of it, excuse me, she was just so frustrated. I was waiting for her just to throw the papers by the end of that video. And he kept saying, I don't understand. I don't understand. And she knew exactly what he was saying, probably hoping that the people filming it wouldn't get it. And I thought, you know, I have all the respect in the world for Thomas.
Me too.
Because that's a tough situation, man. I mean,
oh yeah,
you have to watch for every innuendo and every little comma and period and pause.
Right.
It's crazy.
Well, now, I had two cases right here in Central Ohio that the people relayed what happened, and both had witnesses, so I know they didn't make it up. One of them was a woman who was engaged in homeopathic remedies, you know, doing a great job. Well, they tried to haul her into court. She did go into court.
Hold right there. She's going into court.
Okay.
Hold right there. We'll be up for a short segment after this. And you're listening to Al Whitney tonight, anticorruptionsociety.com. Welcome back. Our guest is Al Whitney, anticorruptionsociety.com, so check that out. And right before the break, you had mentioned about a homeopathic, somebody that did that kind of medicine, and she went into court.
Yes. And she said to the judge, which is unfortunate because she didn't know about Judge Dale. She should have refused the invitation, but she went into court and said to the judge, you are the corporation. I am a living woman. We cannot see each other. And he said, case dismissed.
If it were only that easy now, Al, right?
Okay, so she did that successfully three times. So let's move on. Maybe that was just a fluke, right? But then we have another a local woman who was into court, and I believe it was a traffic mm-hmm. charge.
Okay.
And she demanded to know, tell me the jurisdiction of this court. What is your jurisdiction? And the prosecutor volunteered statutory jurisdiction. Well, if you read Lawfully Yours and Melvin Stamper and all that, you'll understand that statutory and the gold fringe flag, you're in a maritime court.
Correct.
Okay. Statutory jurisdiction, for the people who aren't familiar with this, is based on the statutes that are written. statutes, your state statutes, which are really not laws. They're corporate rules and regulations. They call them statutes. They apply to the dead legal fiction juristic person. They are written for persons. They're written for straw men. The okay. corporations that are pretending to be government cannot contract with, and Tom knows this, and I remember hearing him say that, only equals can contract. So right. they want to make you sign for the straw man, the legal juristic person. So when the prosecutor told this woman that the jurisdiction is statutory, the judge volunteered, everyone in this room is a person. Sadly, the woman kind of, she thinks she's very, very, very smart, and she's going to fight back for sure. Unfortunately, instead of saying, I object, which would be saying, no, I am not, she should have said, I object, I'm a living flesh and blood woman. They would have had to dismiss the charges.
Okay.
But she didn't do that. She didn't. Again, it's trickery.
It is.
And the
it's
more
word,
people.
Sometimes it's wordplay. Wordplay, trickery.
Yes.
It's like a puzzle. You have to try to figure out the riddle, the puzzle.
Right. And the more people are willing to do kind of what you know, a lot of us are doing now, read the material, read Melvin Stamper, and then start analyzing these videos that are put up everywhere. And start collecting stories. And so far, the picture gets clearer and clearer, Aaron, that exactly Judge Dale is 1,000% right. It is that straw man that they are acting against. And they need you to be that person. Now, the one with the blonde magistrate that Tom was in her courtroom.
Mm-hmm.
He was doing a brilliant job. But I think what she did... he had declared that he was a living man, as I recall. But what Tom didn't recognize, and most people don't, is that if you do that, that doesn't mean they're going to stop trying to trick you. Okay? Once we make the declaration, some of them they're determined. So they will keep trying. And if you look at the video about the ones in New Jersey, I could not believe it. That judge was determined to continue to try to trick them. They had to keep repeating and repeating and repeating and repeating and repeating. Mm-hmm. We can't proceed until we establish jurisdiction. Well, let's try this, she'd say. No, yes. They'd say, we can't do that.
I know,
that.
I loved it. I loved it.
Yes. Now, unfortunately, and I'd go back and look at it because Tom was brilliant, and I heard Phil talk about the conditions in you in which he's been subjected to. So please don't think I'm criticizing him, because I'm not. I mean, I probably would have. I would have done a lot worse, probably.
I would have done screwed it up, Al. Are you kidding me? Trust me. Hey, we'll be right back with Al Whitney after this. Our guest is Al Whitney, anticorruptionsociety.com, author of Lawfully Yours. Check that out. It's a fantastic book. I am glad I have it, because it's got nice little letters in there, too. Easy yeah. for me. I can punch and poke and write and fill in the blank, but that's about it. I couldn't have handled it like Thomas did, no. I just couldn't have done it. I don't have the legal, or that legal beagle mind to do that like you guys do.
Well, and Phil pointed out that intimidation gets ramped way up when they've got people in that room that are knowledgeable. And Phil said the guy was just glaring at him. You know, now that's intended to intimidate him, and him threatening to charge him with practicing law without a license. Again, they have no restrictions on the threats that they can make. Because even Phil, when he was in that room, he wasn't a living flesh and blood man. He was in that room as a legal juristic person. Remember, we said that the judge said everyone in the room is a person. So people really have to get that this is all about statutory law, which is written for legal juristic persons, which are dead fiction straw men. And it is us agreeing to wear that coat that they're trying to get. They're trying to get us to say, yes, I'll do that. Aaron, did you ever see that wonderful video called The Straw Man, The Nature of the Cage?
I don't think I've seen that one, Al.
Okay, well, let me put that out there to the listeners. Straw Man, The Nature of the Cage. It's a YouTube. It was done by the same guy who made the documentary Resonance Beings of Frequency. He made this documentary, and I wish I could remember his name. But it beautifully describes the whole straw man deal. It does a great job. And it Brits made this film, and they just did an excellent job. So people need to understand that it's the straw man, that all these rules, vaccination mandates, all of these rules apply to that straw man. And they're all obligated under contract law because they're all corporations. So what they do is they trick us into contracting with them like they did Tom Deegan.
Okay.
That, and it plays out in every arena. You watch it, look for the contract, look for the signature, and then you will see how the game is getting played. How is it that a corporation is getting authority over living flesh and blood men and women, and we are actually unwittingly consenting by our signature?
Yes, that's what gets me.
Yes.
But it's entering into a contract. It's really that simple.
It really is.
I mean, Tom would almost beat that over my head. It's a contract. Okay, it's a contract.
Right.
And that's what we've done. We've done all of it. Now, oddly enough, I've got a question from a listener I got to get to before I forget, Al, but I have another question. When I was reading your book, I just happened to have copies of a lot of my children's birth certificates. I have mine, and I have Brad's, my husband's. And I wanted to see how they were written. My birth certificate was hand-filled in, okay? And it's upper and lower case. But my children, this is like it was done on the computer or typewriter or something. Theirs is all caps. Is there really any difference between that generation and today's generation?
No, other than in 1988, any child that was born after 1988, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
They decided then to automatically give each child a social security number at birth.
Correct.
Okay, before then, that was not the case. Okay, so, you know, there are people who are old enough to remember that they went and got their own social security number when they were 16 and getting ready for their first job. So that social security number translates into a CUSIP number.
Okay.
It is from that number that they get the CUSIP number. But basically, I was, you know, any of us who didn't get one at birth signed up for one. So we signed up to have a straw man as soon as we got old enough to work. We created it.
Yes, I see that we
but
did.
But this scam has been going on. You know, Joyce Rosenwald used to do programs, and she did a program. You can probably find it. Oh, I'm trying to think. Angela Stark, and if you do a search for Angela Stark and Joyce Rosenwald, and then Parents Patriae, she did a wonderful interview with Angela Stark on Parents Patriae, which is where they get this jurisdiction they perceive they've got over your baby. And now they probably have it over your daughter's baby because you actually gave the child to them Let me read this. I know this is going to be familiar to you, but it may be new to some of the listeners. This is from Melvin Stamper's book, and this is on page, 59? And he is quoting from the private papers of Woodrow Wilson. He is quoting Edward Mandell House. And here's what he says. Very soon, every American will be required to register their biological property, that's your children, in a national system designed to keep track of the people and that will operate under the ancient system of pledging. By such methodology, we can compel people to submit to our agenda, which will affect our security as a chargeback for our fiat currency. Every American will be forced to register or suffer not being able to work and earn a living. They will be our chattel, and we will hold the security interest over them forever by operation of the law merchant under the scheme of secured transactions. Americans, by unknowingly or unwittingly delivering the bills of lading to us, that is the certificate of live birth that mom signs,
okay,
will be rendered bankrupt and insolvent, forever to remain economic slaves through taxation secured by their pledges. They will be stripped of their rights and given a commercial value designed to make us a profit, and they will be none the wiser, for not one man in a million could ever figure our plans. And if by accident one or two would figure it out, we have in our arsenal plausible deniability. After all, this is the only logical way to fund government, by floating liens and debts to the registrants in the form of benefits and privilege. Okay? This will inevitably reap to us huge profits beyond our wildest expectation. And that's what they've done. And that's the scam that's going on, and that's that trust. That's when what they wanted that signature for, to get to that trust.
Yeah, that's all they want. I know. I know that my daughter got the birth certificate. I know that. So I know that, you know, my grandbaby already belongs to the state, but hey.
Well, now, what we have in Lawfully Yours, and when you read it, is it's a presumption. It's the presumption. And so when they start to inflict something on you or your granddaughter or your daughter, that's when you come forward and you look in Lawfully Yours and you find ways to rebut the presumption. I mean, it doesn't mean that she's done. It just means that if they're going to try to come against your daughter for anything and try to take charge of that baby, she needs to really read Lawfully Yours and understand that she has, it is her obligation to deny them that consent and make them say, and they will not say, make them prove that they have jurisdiction over that baby. They will not have evidence. They don't even know that that's how the scheme works. But I've been told by people, I was a court-appointed special advocate, I think you mentioned that they cannot pick children up if they don't have that birth certificate. They know that.
Okay.
And you remember those families in Texas where they claimed that this cult had all these children that were being abused and they took custody of them? Well, they had to release them because none of them had birth certificates.
Really? Okay.
But then
here's the problem, and don't let me forget to ask this question for my listener too. But then what do you do when the child that doesn't have their birth certificate wants to get a job or go to college and they need a social security number and all that stuff? I know that's a whole nother show, probably.
It is a whole nother show.
It's a whole nother show. We'll have to plan that, Al, because I really do want to know how to kind of navigate. I don't need to know every nuance, but how to navigate through that, because if I had known when I was having babies the truth, my children probably wouldn't have birth certificates.
Correct. And there are ways to do it, and yeah, it is another show. But just because we have the birth certificate, or the child has the birth certificate, just because the presumption is I'm a straw man, as I think I demonstrated by the woman who stood in front of the judge and said, you're the corporation, I'm a living woman, she probably has a birth certificate too. In other words, it doesn't mean all doors are closed to us. they keep contracting with you again and again and again to get to that trust. It doesn't mean that you have to say yes to all their contracts just because you have the birth certificate.
Correct.
Yeah. So that's what we're trying to tell people, that if one time did it all, they wouldn't keep asking you to sign, would they?
No, they wouldn't keep having you contract with them, even for a speeding ticket. Okay.
Correct.
And like you said, the voter registration, I got to shut that down because I'm not going to vote anyway. I haven't voted for years. It's a waste of my time. And people argue with me all the time. It's like, I can't vote for one evil over the other evil, the lesser of two evils. I can't do it. Let me get to my question. Oh, okay, go ahead now.
Well, they're not going to work for you anyway. They're going to work for the corporation.
Yes. There's nothing for our benefit.
No.
At all. Okay, here's the question. Now, my friend is in Oregon, and he is helping to fight the BLM land grabs that are going on in his county. And I'm going to read you what he put out into my Skype. People spoke out about the Swiftwater Park. They're trying to, the town is, or the county or whatever, is trying to, quote unquote, sell this, what was once designated as a park. Okay, I'll have to get this on the other side. All right. Actually, I'm going to dump it in your Skype if you've got it open, what he wrote, then you can come, and then I can read it real quick and you can come up with an answer. I'll be right back with Al Whitney after this. AntiCorruptionSociety.com. She's also a host on RBN, that's the Republic Broadcasting Network, so check it out. The question from my friend Eddie was, he's fighting the sale of the Swiftwater Park. And they said it sold to about Swiftwater Park being sold to a private party. So commissioners removed the park designation, so that it's no longer called a park now, and brought in a conservancy group, a private company, which also the BLM could not use their funding to make the purchase, while it was the people's land under county control. His question is, are the commissioners corporate officers, and how would you make your approach on it, exposing them as corporate tools?
Yes, they're all corporate officers, and you know, they're doing business. My municipality is a corporation. They're doing business. When it comes to them, if you go to the revised code in that state and you type in the search, you know, county commissioners, then you will read the rules then in the corporate charter for the state, the statutory charter. You'll read the rules that they are obligated to perform under, and you will see they can buy and sell land that they consider county property. But in our country, almost all the land was stolen during the bankruptcy of 1933, Aaron. I think you probably know that. The bank claimed, the Federal Reserve banksters, the IMF, claimed that the United States was bankrupt, and they became the trustees of the bankruptcy, and that the whole birth certificate, the whole scam goes into that, because they put a lien on the land and the people at that time. So they think that they stole it all fair and square. And I can't think of a better way to put it.
It's all fraud.
Mm-hmm. So when you talk about dealing with county commissioners, all I can say to the listener is, we had our municipality was going to take down this park that everybody liked and turn it into something else. The people objected. Again, I kept telling my husband, this is a corporation. You know, good luck with you trying to get them to change their mind, because they're doing business. And enough people were unhappy, however, that they initiated a recall for the city council. They went door to door and they got the signatures to recall all of the city councilors who voted to destroy this park. And guess what? They canceled their plan.
Really? Really?
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the kind of nasty fights we're going to be into, as they try to do things to our communities that we don't like because they're corporations. Now, if the listener wants to expose the fact they're corporations, we have on the website, let me see if I can find it so people can easily get to it, why local governments can't be corporations. And we even put forth a little brochure that you can use to let them know you're on to them. And once they know, because see, they're playing a scam. First of all, they know they're corporations. They don't see anything wrong with it. When you talk to them, well, so what? You know, the lawyers will say, well, so what? We're a corporation. And that's why I explained to you there's a definite difference. They can't, if they're going to admit to being a corporation, then they have no authority over us. They can't have it both ways, can they?
No, but you're right. They don't think it's an issue to be a corporation. Because here's right. what they think. We're still part of the government. That's how they think. Exactly.
Okay. Here it is, before I forget. If you go to Anti-Corruption Society and type in the search box, why we can no longer tolerate government corporations, it explains what I just said. And there is a brochure that we put together that you can hand out to other people and expose the scam. Because if they want to be a corporation, okay, then the next thing, and you'll see this in Lawfully Yours, then you don't have the right to charge me fines or fees or penalties.
Okay.
Unless you have a contract with me, right, Aaron?
Right.
So the more people expose this, the more we're going to be able to say, a friend in California, they said, we passed a new rule, an ordinance, send us this money. And she said, well, I'm not refusing to pay, but send me the copy of the contract that obligates me to send you this money. Well, they couldn't do it.
I say, did she ever hear from them again? Probably not.
Well, they tried, you know. They just sent her another letter repeating the name of the statute. She sent another letter back saying, thanks, I still need a copy of the letter. And they stopped communicating.
It's just ignore and go on. That's what they do. Al Whitney, thanks for being on The Truth Traveler tonight. I really appreciate you and your work.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
I will talk to you soon, girl. Listeners, we'll be back tomorrow night. You'll hear a story that will make you mad. See you then.